Hello and welcome to this episode of the Coached by Halls podcast, a podcast that I hope will help you to live healthier and happier while still enjoying a fun-filled life. A special episode today, and it's a good one. And I'd love nothing more than to continue making podcasts like these to help you live healthier and happier. That's my only goal. So I would really appreciate it if you could review the podcast, share it to your Instagram stories, share it with other people to hopefully help them too. I have invited my lovely friend Kinga onto the podcast for this episode. She is a physiotherapist and she has answered some amazing questions asked by my Instagram followers. I hope you enjoy. I have no doubt you will. Did you see you have a mic plugged in?
I've unplugged.
I think I know what I need to change. Speaker. Internal. Try now.
La 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 la.
Yes. So I had my speaker set to my mic, so that's why I couldn't hear you, not to mine.
Okay, that's fine. That's fine. That's good. That's
there
good.
There we go.
I was just all the time like, la, 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 la.
How are you?
I'm good. How are you?
Thank you. Really good. Thank you.
Oh, it's okay. It's my pleasure. I thought it would be such a nice thing to do.
Yeah.
I've done anything like that in like almost 3 years now. So
3 years.
Yeah. Since I went to like my physio job, I've been like, so under the radar, which is fine. But like, yeah. I enjoy doing this, so I'm like, oh my god, yeah, for sure I'll do this.
Nice. So I was gonna give you a bit of an introduction, but I don't think there's anyone better to introduce you than yourself. You know exactly what you do. So go on, who are you and what do you do?
My name is Kinga and I am a physicist. Oh. let's do this again because I clearly can't say what my job is. So hi, my name is Kinga and I am a physiotherapist. My background is in personal training and that's kind of how I started. Then I realized that actually there's a lot more people there that I could help. So yeah. I thought, let me just broaden my horizons. So I've applied to do a physio degree. And yeah, now I've been working as a physio for almost 3 years. So
I can't believe it's 3 years because we actually met on a business mentorship for personal training, didn't we?
Yeah, indeed.
When was that?
2022 is when I started as a physio. So it must have been around 2020, 2021.
That's crazy.
It feels like yesterday.
Yeah, literally.
In Manchester, chatting ideas.
Yeah, literally. Oh, I love that. So, yeah, but you're now down in, is it South?
Southampton, yeah. I'm in Southampton.
And that's where you're based as a physio.
So I work, I have kind of like two roles that I do. Okay. So one of my roles is I work for the military, for the UK Ministry of Defence. So I do rehab with soldiers and trying to get them back up and running. And then my other job, I just work in a little private clinic in Southampton. So my military role is in Portsmouth, which is around 20 miles from Southampton. And then my other job is in Southampton. So I'm kind of on the M27 every day. the joys.
Oh, I love that. And I've actually got quite a few questions for you today. And actually some of them are kind of physio mixed with a little bit of personal training as well.
Perfect.
Literally, shall we start with the questions then?
Yes, let's do it.
So the first question was, what is the most common running injury that you see?
Ooh, there's a few that I can think of. Usually runners, my dear runners. The thing about runners, I'm going to go on a tangent a little bit. The thing about runners, they don't tend to like the gym very much. Some people are, I think they call themselves like hybrid or whatever. They do like a little bit of gym, a little bit of running, and that's awesome. But usually if someone's a runner, they like running because usually it doesn't involve any equipment, because they just come up and go whenever they want, because they have maybe responsibilities that they kind of just like, oh, I have half an hour, let me just go and do some sprints quickly. Or, you know, they don't tend to like the gym very much. So they tend to, you know, be very good at running. Unfortunately, sometimes the tendon strength, the muscle strength and all that means they're quite prone to injury. So big one is for people who start running, that would be your so-called shin splints. So this is where you get a little bit of problem around your shin, and that is always to do with your body not adapting to the loading very well. So we're always, when we start a new thing, we're enthusiastic, we want to just go every day, and sadly that's how we get injured. Yeah, exactly. The enthusiasm can, you know, sometimes definitely be quite harmful to us. So your shin splints, nothing necessarily to worry about. If you are experiencing kind of shin pain with either fast walking or running, all you need to do is try to find the volume of running that you can do with minimal symptoms, and your body will adapt. So say if you did, you know, decide new year, new me, I'm going to be running every day, and then, you know, after a couple of weeks you're like, I can't walk because of my shins, let's just strip it down to say twice a week, see how that goes. If you're still getting symptoms, maybe you'll need to take full, you know, a couple of week rest or something like that. But you don't always have to fully stop the activity. It's just try to reduce it by 10-20% first, see how your body adapts. If you're still having issues, reduce it further, and so on and so forth. And then once you're feeling good, just build it back up. Okay. So shin splints is very common. And other injuries, I would say, would probably be more like tendon issues. So you have your runner's knee, very famous. It's even called that. So knee pain, you can have a little bit of an Achilles problem as well. So those are the other ones that, again, but it's all to do kind of with load and maybe a little bit of muscle weakness, because, yeah, like I said, runners don't tend to be gym goers a lot of the time.
And stretching as well. I feel like runners don't stretch too much.
Yeah. Hamstrings especially. Like footballers and running and runners. Hamstrings.
All hamstrings.
Yeah.
I remember I started running about this time last year. And then a couple of months in, I'd increased my distance. And then one day I just went for a run and my shins were just like, nope, not today. And I put that on my story, and my cousin, who's a very keen runner, he was like, shin splints, you'll be fine, rest, and then come back to it. And it was just that one time, and then that was it. We're all good.
Yeah, exactly. So it's nothing to worry about if you're having pains and aches. Don't panic. The first step in any kind of injury, I would say, that will apply to most of different injuries, is don't panic. You don't have to stop straight away. Yeah. Just reduce it slightly and see how it goes.
Perfect. Love that. This next question is very interesting, actually. So the question is, I wear a prosthetic left upper limb, which I guess is an arm. Can you recommend any exercises for the shoulders and back?
So I think it's a very interesting one, but it's a tricky one for me to answer, because it would depend also where the amputation was. So if you assume if you're wearing a prosthetic, you've had a upper limb amputation, but it could be, you know, at any really joint.
So that
would kind of change what you, not necessarily what you do, but maybe how you do it, which muscles are affected, and, you know, and so on and so forth. But I think in this situation, there's loads of resources on YouTube and stuff like that. But I think if you know, you're living with this, you want to get stronger, you want to do things to help it, I think the best thing to do would be to see like an amputee specialist, physio, even if it's for a one-off session, even if it's a one-off session, just to get as much advice as possible, because that's a very specialist area. And I think I would almost be doing a disservice giving just some generic advice. My best advice would be go to a specialist. You know, even if it's a one-off, that's absolutely fine. If you can, maybe even work with them for a slightly longer period of time so that you get a little bit of... But then you'll learn the progressions, regressions, how to adapt and stuff like that. But, you know, if you're not in position to do that, even a one-off session, I think, would be invaluable. It would be invaluable to then help you manage it.
Yeah, I suppose something like that, you have to work one-to-one in person.
Yeah,
the best.
I think that would be the best thing. But sometimes you could even see, you know, if private physio is not necessarily an option, I'm sure NHS do, kind of like amputee specialist physios that could help. Sometimes it might be a bit of a wait, but I'm sure there's still an option for that.
Perfect. I think that'd be really helpful. Thank you for that. Next one then. I suffer with back pain. Would you recommend movement or rest?
Oh, that's a very, very interesting one. Actually, I did my dissertation on back pain.
Oh, really?
Yeah, I did my dissertation on to see whether glute strength helps back pain symptoms. So, yeah, that was my dissertation topic. But with back pain, it depends, right? Yeah. That's always the answer. Let's maybe cover the circumstances in which I would say rest is the best idea. Okay. So if you had a very kind of acute onset of back pain, so it just happened, you know, whether you've done something in the gym or whether you've, you know, sometimes it's as simple as you're picking up something from the floor and your back just went. So it doesn't even have to be anything massive for your back to flare up sometimes, sadly. I would say initial days, rest, don't force it, but also don't be afraid to move.
Okay.
So your back, like your spine, is so resilient. If you think about a function of it, you know, it has to transfer forces from your legs to your arms and through your core and all of that. So, you know, it's meant to be resilient. It's meant to be, you know, very solid, let's just say. But sometimes I think we think that, oh, our precious little bug, you know, or our baby, but it can really handle a lot. So we don't have to necessarily babysit it if something happens. However, if you continue to do things to, you know, to an extreme levels of pain, I can't rest, I have to move, but you literally have to support yourself when you're walking, that's probably not the best idea. Mm-hmm. So to put it maybe in more practical terms, move as much as your body allows you to with the current symptoms that you're having. So that would be more if your back pain has just happened, you know, literally yesterday, you know, you did something and now you're in a lot of pain and you don't know what you're doing. A lot of people, probably majority of back pain, is people who have suffered with back pain for a long, long time. Okay. So for that answer, I guess, will be slightly different. And sometimes could be even trying the opposite of what you have been doing, because people with what we call like chronic or persistent back pain, so back pain that doesn't tend to settle within, let's say, 3 months or so, because that's usually within 3 months, like a flare-up technically should settle. But for some people, it can persist for years and years and years. And we often see two ends of the spectrum, really. We see people who are very scared to move, or we see people who just will not stop no matter what. So, you know, and the answer is always somewhere in the middle, isn't it? Like it is in any situation in life. But yeah, your back loves movement. So for most of kind of back pain, movement will be key. The question is how much movement. But one thing I just want to reassure pretty much everyone, unless you are in some sort of a car crash where you're suspected you fractured your spine, but I don't imagine you'd be wondering then. You'd probably be at the hospital then. If something like that has happened where you had a big impact, you might think, oh, have I actually broken something? Okay, then it's a very valid question. We need to be careful to make sure we don't do anything silly. But if no kind of really hard impact has happened to your back, and it's just kind of, you were lifting something in the gym or lifting a paper off the floor, very heavy, very difficult, isn't it? But sadly, a cause for a lot of flare-ups. Movement should usually be beneficial. Just if we think about like a scale from 0 to 10 in terms of pain, so 10 being your worst pain ever, if you keep yourself within that 0 to maybe 4 or 5 out of 10, you'll be good. Yeah, you'll be good. If you avoid your pain too much, you probably take longer to recover. Yeah. And actually, if you flare your pain, say, constantly above that 5, you'll probably take longer to recover as well.
Both ends there.
Yeah. Yeah.
And yeah, I think people, like, the back is like an area that like scares us almost, because like, say I've done deadlifts with clients in the gym, you do get the pain in the back afterwards, but it's a pain of the muscles and you need to keep moving. It's not a bad pain at all, but just because it's in your back, people tend to be scared of the pain, but often movements pass.
More than if you did some squats and had a little bit of a knee pain, right?
Yeah.
Which is still common, but not a lot of people are that scared of that, but back. But yeah, you actually touched on a really good point that, people say, oh, you shouldn't feel deadlifts in your back. Yeah, if you're conditioned to deadlift, maybe. But I know if I've been off, like, let's say if I had a really bad flu and had some times off the gym, or maybe I focused on my cardio and did some other type of training and I've just not done heavy lifting.
Of course.
My back will be my legs will be fine. I would get such a lower back pump.
Yeah, literally.
Muscles, it's crazy. If I had a few weeks where I've just not done heavy lifting, my back will be the first one to. But like you said, it's the muscles, it's nothing else. It's that, and I always say, you will learn to differentiate that the more you kind of train. You'll learn to see, oh no, it actually feels as if I've done squats and my quads are burning, right? It's kind of your paraspinals and all that. It is just, all pumped up. But it's the first thing. If I take some time of lifting, 100%. So maybe if you're conditioned, you will have zero, you won't feel anything in your back, but
Agreed. Love that. Next one. This is quite a specific one. I'm not sure on the advice whether this is something that someone would have to see a physio for. But I am 34. I keep getting shoulder pain when training. Any advice? I suppose that could be quite a wide range of different.
Yeah, so definitely could be a lot of things. But one thing that comes to mind is, with shoulder pain, there's usually two most common things that I can give you, especially if that shoulder pain is not something that is like overtaking your life and you're really struggling, then go see a physio. But if it's just like a little niggle that you would like to try some things for, and then if it doesn't work, see a physio, I can give a little bit of advice. So one, we're all in the laptop era, right? We're all desk-based. And even me as a physio, I'm a lot more desk-based than I thought I ever would be. So tightness kind of in your upper traps, in your neck, all that can also affect kind of your posture, can affect your shoulder movement and how you recruit your muscles when you're lifting. So doing a little bit of kind of desk, the typical desk mobility exercises, exactly, some shoulder stretches, some neck stretches, could be really, really good. Another big thing, probably the biggest advice, would be to incorporate some rotator cuff exercises as almost like a warm-up before you start training. If you train upper body, definitely before your upper body movements. But if you train full body, then you can just do it, on every gym session. So doing some rotator cuff loading, which will be kind of your external rotation movements. So that would be, incorporate a little bit of that in terms of how much, if you do maybe 3 sets of that per session, 3 to 4 sets per session, 3 times a week, and if you treat it as any other gym exercise, that you progressively add your reps, some weight, whether it's banded or cables or whatever, if you start working on that a little bit more, loading that rotator cuff, that should help.
Okay.
And again, if it doesn't, or if any of that makes that shoulder, you know, a little bit more painful, then definitely go and just see someone about it, and they'll be able to give you more more personal kind of advice.
Amazing. And I suppose the whole posture, sitting at a desk, and movements whilst seated at a desk would relate to a lot of back pain as well. Sitting for long periods of time, our bodies aren't designed to sit down for long periods of time. You need to be up and moving.
Exactly. And one thing about posture is, you know, people think posture like that with your chest up and shoulders back, oh, that's the perfect posture. But I've treated so many patients who've been told that and just got stuck in this position. And, you know, when you have your rounded shoulders, your pecs will be really tight, you know, and you'll have issues kind of there. If you're in the opposite position, your low back will be really tight because you're arching. So it's like in every position, in every posture, if you continuously sit in that same posture for long periods of time, you're going to probably end up having some sort of problems at some point. So like you said, bodies are designed to move. So it's not like one posture is better than the other. The best posture is the one that you change often. So that's the advice I would give. It doesn't matter how you sit, just make sure you change that position often and you'll be fine.
Interesting. I'm glad we've gone over that. Brill. Another back related exercise. Any advice for a slipped disc? I'm reluctant to even move, but I keep getting told movement is best.
Yeah, so for this one, it's a tricky one. So situations like a slipped disc, it's a tricky pain. Hopefully the person asking would have been kind of properly diagnosed with that, because sometimes the things I've heard about, and myths I've heard about slipped disc, I think we could do another podcast just on that, because there's a lot. There's definitely...
We'll threaten you with another podcast.
But let's just clarify, kind of by slipped disc, we mean, what we actually mean by that, first of all, for kind of everyone listening. So slipped disc is when, you know, your discs in your spine bulge a little bit. So disc actually doesn't go anywhere. So it doesn't kind of slip down. So I actually had something wild once that someone said, oh yeah, I slipped my disc, and then my osteopath, physio, whoever, found it all the way up my leg and had to put it back. I'm like, okay, that is actually wild, because that definitely hasn't happened. Definitely has not happened. So the disc, they don't go anywhere. They don't drop, you know, to your legs or anywhere like that. Absolutely not. All that happens is the disc can bulge just a little bit. So if you think about a donut, right? If you squish a donut, the jam will fill to the side a little bit. That is basically a slipped disc. But most of us will have a little bit of that anyway, right? So that is not an issue in itself. That happens. That's normal. That's just a process, you know, our spines undergo, especially as we age. You know, we can have degenerative changes that can also affect that, you know, the discs' health over years, you know, will reduce, unfortunately, and these things are normal. When we're having symptoms of your slipped disc is usually when that jam, that disc, is pressing on our nerve. The best way I usually explain it is that the nerve is then feeling claustrophobic. So say a sciatica, right? So that would start kind of pressing on that nerve, and then you will have symptoms like pins and needles, pain down your legs, pain kind of around your bottom, and things like that. Mm-hmm. So this is what we mean with slipped disc. So I hope that this is kind of what the person is asking about, not just kind of like localized back pain, because with localized back pain, yes, it could be a disc, but it could also be so many different things. It's very hard to exactly diagnose that. But the advice I'm going to give is about that kind of pain and pins and needles, you know, maybe some numbness down your legs and stuff like that. So if this is what you're experiencing, then yes, movement is important. However, nerve pain is treated slightly differently to muscle pain. So with muscle pain, I'd be much more willing to tell you, yeah, just push through that pain a little bit and it will get better. With nerve pain, you kind of want to avoid that a little bit. So with nerve pain, you want to be moving, but you want to do your best not to aggravate that leg pain, because nerves are almost, the more you aggravate it, the more angry the nerve will be, the more sensitized will be, the longer it will go on for. However, with muscles and like tendons, sometimes if you give it a bit of a nudge, it will just resolve quicker if you do push it to a bit of pain. With nerves, sadly, that's not the case. So it's just slightly management. So I'd be a lot more careful about doing exercises. So if you know, you know, you have that issue and you know, let's say deadlifts is something that aggravates it, I just wouldn't do deadlifts. If you can't find a way to adapt a deadlift, again, if you tried reducing weight, if you've tried reducing your range of movement, if you've tried, you know, doing it, even, you know, some body weight hinges and stuff like that, and every time you hinge, it you know, you get raging leg pain, I would say it's not worth it. But let's say, or sometimes, you know, you get a relief from actually bending your spine, but you just can't extend your spine. Just work within, so bend your spine, make sure you do those positions that relieve your symptoms rather than trying to poke the positions that aggravate your pain. But that's very specific to that nerve pain, because with any other, if you had knee pain, I'd probably say you need to be squatting, you know, in some capacity.
Okay.
Because otherwise you will sensitize to that movement. Whereas with nerve pain, it's just that little bit of advice. That's why I kind of wanted to clarify what I mean by slip disc and what advice I'll be given. Because, if someone said that you have a slip disc, but actually you have no leg pain or buttock pain, no kind of nervy symptoms such as pins and needles, numbness, anything like that, you know, and someone said, oh, yeah, it's probably slip disc because you have a little bit, you know, of low back pain, that advice probably wouldn't apply.
Okay. Brilliant. Perfect. Next question. Best treatment for a sprained ankle. Would you recommend heat or cold?
So sprained ankles are something simple that can actually sometimes go really, really wrong. With that, again, I always go on a little tangent. So
you go for it.
But I still remember one patient I had who came to me with a sprained ankle 3 months later. On crutches still, because she went to a new walking center, one of those. She got given a pair of crutches and absolutely zero advice on how to stop using them. Mm-hmm. And she was so terrified that she kept using them. And then 3 months later, she came to see me. And I was like, give me those now. Now I'm taking them away now. And she improved very quickly after she actually started walking normally. So for like a normal sprained ankle, so let's say you just rolled it a little bit, but you don't have, you know, massive swelling, or, you know, you can still weight bear and things. So let's exclude all those things that would make you want to go to the hospital. For, you know, like a simple low-level sprained ankle and any kind of new injury, it used to be rest, elevate, ice, and all that. So that has changed a little bit now. Now you have a whole new acronym called Peace and Love. Okay, so I know.
Valentine's Day on Friday.
So the main kind of take messages from the Peace and Love would be, you want to avoid icing and anti-inflammatories within the first kind of 3 days or so of a new injury.
Okay.
Because you want the natural healing process and the natural inflammatory response to kick in. So initially, if you need painkillers, probably paracetamol would be your main thing to go. And heat, if you want to use it, if you find it helpful, that's fine, but you want to avoid anything that will reduce inflammation in the first 3 days. After the 3 days, feel free to use whatever works, basically.
I'm so glad you have said that, because how long ago was I at uni now? That's terrifying. I started, oh my God, 10 years ago I started uni. And the first thing they told us when we started, I remember in the first seminar, if you have a sprained ankle, you want to ice, elevate, anti-inflammatories. But at the same time, they were telling us that swelling is taking the good blood to the area and pushing the like damaged stuff away. So in my head, I was like, so why do you want to reduce the swelling? Surely you want the swelling to be there. So that's all changed now.
Perfect. Yeah. So they finally changed the guidance.
Okay.
A few years ago now, I think. So yeah, peace and love is now the new one. So basically let it be a little bit.
Mm-hmm.
But do relative rest for the first 3 days. So if walking is too much, it's fine. Don't walk. So again, give yourself 3 days to kind of just work with your body. Move as much as your body lets you, but don't push it. The first 3 days, relative rest. If you need painkillers, just nothing, no ibuprofens, no naproxens, nothing like that. Don't worry about the swelling. Let it come down. After 3 days, feel free to use whatever kind of you can elevate. That's absolutely fine. But the rest of the things you you don't want to be doing too much of. After 3 days, you want to be like, okay, I've had my relative rest. Let me now try to do something. So for sprained ankle, you're going to lose a little bit of what we call proprioception. So that spatial awareness of the joint. So your joints can usually tell where they are in space. But when you injure a joint, and it can be an ankle, can be a shoulder, it can be a knee, you lose that ability a little bit. That's why you keep looking at your feet, you know, where you're walking and stuff like that, because you lose that, you lose that connection a little bit. So you want to be doing a lot of things like kind of single leg standing as much as possible, or even if you're washing up, you know, dishes, if you're brushing your teeth, trying to shift a little bit of load onto that leg. So it just learns to accept that load again. And then each day, ideally, you're trying to do more and more and more. Do your kind of ankle range of movement exercises. Do a little bit of strengthening, a little bit of foot strengthening as well. So kind of doing things barefoot and then stabilizing, you know, anything that you can feel a little bit of a burn within the arch of the foot. Mm-hmm. Slowly move on to a little bit of calf raise, kind of type of exercise. And hopefully within kind of 4 to 6 weeks with a simple sprain, you'll forget about it.
Perfect. And I suppose it is always just coming into your own body and listening to your body and like what it's telling you. Try not to rely too much on external advice and being like, okay, what am I feeling?
Exactly that. Because your body will tell you.
Yeah. Yeah, perfect. Ooh, two more. These are quite interesting ones. So next question is, how regularly should you see a physio, and does it improve how much you can lift if you continuously have them?
Well, my question would be, depends what you're seeing them for.
Yeah.
I would imagine you have, let's say you're a gym goer and you've had a shoulder or a knee injury or something limiting your progress in the gym, and that's why you've seen a physio. So the answer is yes, if you're not seeing improvements in terms of how much you're lifting over time, I'd be asking a question why. There could be an explanation. So it could be, you know, there could be an explanation, but I would be definitely saying, okay, if you've seen a physio for 3 months, and you're not really getting anywhere in terms of your goals, or 2 months and you're not even, you know, you can't see that you are slowly improving, I'd be just asking questions, not necessarily, you know, saying that that's wrong, or you know, could be a really good explanation as to why that's happening. But I would be asking that question. And in terms of how often, it really depends on individual needs. So I have patients who see me every week. I have patients who see me every month.
And
it really depends.
And is that them coming to you with a problem in the first place and you're working with them to resolve that problem?
Yeah, exactly. So usually patients would come to me. Some patients don't have goals. They just have a bit of shoulder pain that they would like to go away. And they don't have necessarily goals that they want to achieve. And that's absolutely fine. But let's say maybe I have people who want to run a half marathon. And their ankle pain prevents them from running more than 5K.
Okay.
Okay, so let's say if I was working with that person for 3 months and they were still at 5K, I'd be thinking, why is that the case? You know, what is happening? I would expect to see some improvement. But usually, yeah, there would be some sort of a goal. Or let's say you're a gym goer and your knee pain is preventing you from squatting and you want to be able to squat however much, you know, whether it's for your own goals or whether you do it as some sort of competition or whether, you know, whatever reason you want to be squatting a certain amount and you don't feel like you're lifting anymore, you should, because with physio, you apply a lot of the same principles as you do in personal training. So all the progressive overload and stuff like that, we do a lot of teaching on that and how to apply this. So even to, you know, when you first maybe come see a physio and you get given some like little banded exercises, like that should slowly, you know, that rehab should slowly become your normal training routine.
Okay.
So towards the end of, like, when I'm working with patients towards the end of their journey with me, unless they want to continue on like a personal training basis towards the end of the physio journey, they go out with a gym exercise plan. Okay. They don't go out with a few, you know, banded little exercises that could be good for a beginning for you know, at the beginning, but probably not when they finish and you know, and their symptoms are better. You need that loading. You need to make sure you do lift more over time, because otherwise you won't get the adaptations. And yeah, especially if that's your goal, you definitely should be seeing it. But if you're really, let's say, the reasons why you would see a physio more often would be maybe you're same as you would have more often, kind of more frequent personal training session. If you're not sure how to, you know, work around the gym, if you're not sure what you're doing training wise, or if you're really scared of your injury, because a lot of people are just terrified. Let's say that back pain. If you are, you know, if you're struggling to let go of that a little bit, if you're struggling with your back, you might just need someone with you, especially initially. You might need someone weekly with you in that gym, showing you that it's okay to move. And that, I think that's a really big part of my job, is just showing people that it's okay to move.
Yes.
Because this is scary. It's scary. It's like, you know, I'd compare it to if something is rattling in my car. It's scary because I have no idea. So as soon as I hear a noise that I haven't heard before, I'm panicking.
Yeah, good analogy. I like that.
I'm panicking 100%. So it's not, you know, we can say about these things because we know it, because we work, you know, in this profession. So I can say it's okay, but for someone who doesn't, it's terrifying. Like it would be in like a car for me. I would have no idea. And then I would take it to a mechanic and they would look at me. Oh, you silly girl. It's only
it's one. Fine.
What is this? I don't know. So it's completely normal. But I think, yeah, just showing people that it's okay to move and maybe showing them how to move. So if you feel like you're in this situation where you're stuck, where where you get given advice but you struggle to apply it, mm-hmm. I would be seeing someone more often. Or if you feel, because, you know, I'd say a small part of physio's job, in my opinion, is maybe helping you with more manual techniques, such as kind of manual therapy or massage. That can be helpful temporarily. And if that helps you move better, I think it's good to use this.
I was going to ask you that, about, like massage and stuff.
Yeah, so it doesn't produce long-term effects.
Okay.
But especially if you're active, if you're exercising, if you need, you know, a little bit of that, that's absolutely fine. When you are exercising, you're active, you're probably going to maintain the benefits of it for longer.
Okay.
But if you think that, okay, I have back pain, I'm just going to have 10 massages and hope it goes away, and you're still kind of not moving and avoiding the things that you should be doing, it's probably not going to help.
Okay.
So, it's a good tool to use, but I wouldn't say you can do without it.
Yeah.
Let's say if you're, if someone comes to me and says, look, I have very limited budget, I can't be seeing you a lot, can we come up with the most cost-effective plan? I wouldn't be doing any massages. Let's just put it like that. But if someone says, yeah, I don't, you know, I've got whatever, like, give me the best treatment plan. Mm-hmm. I'd probably throw some massage in there.
Yeah.
But if you're thinking about, I need to do the things that work, that probably wouldn't be top of my priority.
Yeah. And thank you for the honesty there as well, because everything that you see on Instagram now, it's just people trying to sell, and will say anything to sell. So thank you for the honesty there.
it's honestly really sad. And I think it makes me even sadder in healthcare, because mm-hmm. we get into healthcare because we want to help people. And then you see how again, that's another rant there. Maybe I'll save you all the rant, but it makes me very angry. Makes me very, very angry, especially so in healthcare. I get it with cars, pens, I don't know, clothing, whatever. I don't care, you know, but with healthcare, no.
So much confusing and conflicting.
Yeah. You're just harming people. Why did you get into healthcare to harm people? I don't understand, but...
This is why our paths crossed in the first place. We have very similar beliefs. We align. Yes,
100%.
So we've got one more physio-related question. So, and this links physio and your personal training background quite nicely. What's the best workout structure in resistance training to avoid overtraining and prevent injury? I like this one.
That's a really good question. Mm-hmm. The thing is,
it depends.
It depends. But I would say if you don't necessarily have any weaker or stronger areas, if you're just neutral, you know, and you want to maybe just continue training, make sure you do an even amount, you know, of everything. However, that's where it depends. Because sometimes, let's say, for most people, their front would be very strong. So say their quads are super strong, but their glutes and hamstrings are very weak. So if they continue to train all of that equally, that discrepancy will probably never, finish. And so then maybe they would need to train a bit more glutes and hamstrings, a bit less quads temporarily. But you can probably tell these things if you can leg extension like full stack and you can hamstring curl one plate.
Okay.
You probably have a little bit of an issue there. Just a ton. Just a little. But yeah, if you feel again you're maybe a desk worker and you're hunched over, you know, rounded shoulders for a lot of the time, I would say you need to be doing more back. You need to be doing more kind of opening exercises. You need to strengthen, you know, everything around your shoulder blades, you know, your back muscles and all that. So I think it really depends who is asking the question.
Yeah.
If you don't feel like you have many discrepancies like that, mm-hmm. making sure you do an equal amount, because I think, you know, bodybuilding and I guess social media got us chasing, you know, oh, I want big biceps, oh, I want big glutes, and I want big this and I want big that. So sometimes training for aesthetic can really put you in a bad position for picking up injuries, because you're just neglecting, you're focusing on what you want to grow in terms of aesthetic, but you don't think that, you know, if you're only training your glutes, everything else might get quite mm-hmm. weak. And then, you know, and then you go on a run and your quads got really weak because you don't want to grow your thighs, you just want to grow your glutes. And then you have knee pain, right? Because, and so on and so forth. So sometimes I think a lot of the time training for aesthetic is definitely not training for health. But I think we've known that, you know, for a long time now, I think. But yeah, ideally well-rounded. So make sure if you do however much back, you do the same for chest, for your shoulders. So kind of either a full body workout or two upper, two lower. Depends how many times a week you go to the gym. I'm quite an advocate of a full body training routine. Yeah. I think it's great. I really like full body training rather than kind of legs or push and pull mm-hmm. And stuff like that. Because even with push and pull, you're still doing twice as much upper body than lower body. If
you think about it. True. I didn't think about that, actually.
Yeah.
Yeah, and like understanding that more isn't always better, like you have to have your rest days in there as well.
Exactly. You really don't need as much. I think the science is saying, even for muscle growth, you probably don't, like, per week, you don't need more than 30 sets. So I think 30 sets per week per muscle group is like the upper limit. Past that, you don't really get much more from that. Yeah, so 30 sets. And I think that's for glutes, which is your biggest muscle group. For smaller muscle groups, it will be way less.
Okay.
It will be way less. I think you need as little as 12 sets. Oh. Yeah. So something around. So if you add around, let's say, 20 per week per muscle group, you'll probably be all right.
Mm-hmm.
So yeah, you definitely don't want to be overtraining. Another story I have is I was treating this 16-year-old. So, but he just had a lot of free time and loved the gym.
Fez, very well.
And he had so many issues. But then I was like, can you show me your training plan? And his, like, chest day would be 5 sets of incline bench, 5 sets of flat bench, 5 sets of decline bench, 5 sets of cable flies, 5 different exercises for shoulders in different variations. I'm like, okay, this stops.
That's why.
So with him, it was about showing him how to take sets to almost failure. So that was how I worked with him. So I just showed him, look, you literally don't need more than, say, 3-4 sets per exercise most of the time. Unless you're working for strength and you're only doing, like, very low reps, then you might want to increase your sets. But if you're thinking, you know, any other sort of training, you really don't need that much. But you just need to learn to take your sets seriously. Yeah, basically.
Amazing. Brilliant. So I have one last question, totally unrelated to physio. One of mine and my partner Ryan's favourite questions to ask people is, what would your death row meal be? So you can have one last starter, main, dessert on earth. What would you choose?
You know what? I was thinking about it and I think the answer would differ.
Depending.
If you asked me tomorrow, it would probably be a different answer.
Yeah.
It would probably be a different answer. But so my favorite food would be probably either Greek, Turkish, or like Thai, kind of Japanese. Those are the vibes I'd be going for. So let's combine maybe all of them together. And it would sound probably disgusting, but I don't care. I definitely want some sushi. And I'm going to pick sushi as a starter.
So
I'll have like a sushi set with some sashimi as well, which I really love. So yeah, sushi will be my starter. So I'll have a little bit of sushi. And then I would have like a, probably a Turkish for my main. I'd have some maybe some lamb chops or like lamb skewers or something like that, grilled, like charred grilled. That would be amazing with some nice rice and salad.
Love.
Bang on. And in terms of dessert, it would be so random. I think I'll go for tiramisu. A homemade one. None of that shop stuff. I think it's the most random meal you probably
it's had. Your last meal. You can choose whatever you want. Mine is, I have onion bhajis and mango chutney to start.
Ooh.
My main is a lamb roast dinner. And I suppose my main and my dessert are both quite similar. Lamb roast dinner, and then my dessert is a sticky toffee pudding with custard.
Oh, I love how we both pick lamb as well.
I know, yeah. And Turkish, Greek food, Japanese, Thai, the best.
That's probably where my love is. But it could be like a Thai curry as well. Maybe if you ask me tomorrow, it could be a Thai curry. It could be something like that. But I think today would be, probably Turkish.
The flavor.
Yeah.
It's got to be there.
100%.
Amazing. Well, thank you so much for that.
You're very welcome. I really enjoyed that.
Do you have like an Instagram handle where people can find you? I'll pop it in the show notes.
So you can follow me on my business page, which I haven't used for a long time, but I think maybe if you guys give me a little bit of a nudge, I might start creating content again. So that's at Fulminate Fitness on Instagram. I used to create a lot of content, and I think since I got my physio job, I went a little bit under the radar. But if you guys give me enough poking, I'm sure, because I used to enjoy producing content, so I can start doing that again. But yeah, if you need any advice, or if you need me to elaborate a little bit more on any of these questions, you can just send me a message on Fulminate Fitness page.
And we need more content we can trust, and your content we could absolutely trust. So you need people like you. Amazing. Well, thank you so much, and I hope everyone enjoys it.
Thank you, guys.
How amazing was that? I loved every moment of that. We covered lots of topics there. If you have any more questions for Kinga, I will put her Instagram handle in the show notes. Don't be afraid to give her a follow and ask her any questions you might have. Thank you so much for listening. Okay, love you. Bye.